more things I used to do. I don't do no more, for the Lord's made a change in me.
Hello, this is Real History. I am Melissa. Today is the 9th of January, 2025, and I'll just say that we're recording this almost a full week early just because of schedule. I am here today for what is going to be kind of a combo, the usual monthly recording with Neil Foster and also maybe a bit of a year-end check-in. So how are you?
I'm okay. I'm, I think like last year, I'm on one leg again.
You had a fall and you hurt your ankle.
Yeah.
With a twist.
Yeah. I might have broken something, but, I ain't going to the hospital for x-rays. And they go, oh, there's $1,000 for an x-ray. And by the way, just stay off your ankle and you'll be all right. I already know that. So I'll save the money.
Okay. So you're in full market day mode,
yeah,
with the jewelry.
Yeah. Well, I did one on New Year's Eve, actually, 7 till midnight.
Wow.
That was out at the old rodeo place. That was okay. It was a bit unusual because people weren't really walking about, you know. They were kind of more focused on the music and the entertainment and stuff like that. But there were only four vendors there, but yeah, did all right. Yeah, I think the last time I was talking about, you know, made this, made that, you know, and I was thinking about, you were talking to somebody about what was the most important thing, and I think the person said time. And, it's kind of the way I've always thought about money, to be honest. It buys me time to do something else.
Mm.
And that's what I'm doing. I'm buying time. Because if I didn't do this, then I'd have to get a proper job. And I wouldn't have time to do anything, if that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does make sense. I've been in this kind of planning and reflecting and thinking mode about how I can be, how what I'm doing can actually support me. Because mm-hmm. the idea of having to go do something else means that I really wouldn't have time to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I was supposed to get into the garden and start my planting, but my ankles kind of put that off, and was expecting some kind of cold spell the next week or so. So that's probably a good thing I didn't.
Yeah.
So hopefully the ankle's better in a couple of weeks. I can just get it all in the greenhouse and hopefully force it on a bit quicker.
Well, is it healing? Because it's been a couple
slowly,
of weeks.
2 weeks today. 2 weeks yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did the wrong thing. I finished doing my deliveries when I shouldn't have. I should have just came home, but there you go. Dedicated, see?
Yeah.
I like doing the job right, so that's what got me falling over in the first place, because I was determined to find this address, and I just couldn't find it. I was just back and forward, and yeah, there you go. Learn my lesson.
Well, that's too bad.
Yep.
So what else is going on?
What's going on? On a domestic front or just in general?
Oh, sure. Anything you want to talk
domestic
about?
Domestic front, Jack's getting a bit more mature. He's not running away anymore. He's all right. The chickens are okay. They've all puffed up for the winter and getting ready for cold weather. It's still laying eggs. So, yeah, they're good. We haven't lost any more, thankfully.
Good.
I haven't got any more either because, as I say, the ankles kind of put things off because I'd have to be looking after them as well. So, I'm just getting on making jewellery and selling it and, yeah, doing all right. Trying to think up new ways of making jewellery and just having something different every time I go to the same place, you know. The ranch place I go to, it's a dude ranch. I'm sure you've got them down in Texas as well.
These
resorts that are all Western orientated. Everybody's walking about in cowboy hats and boots and all that kind of stuff.
My parents took us to a dude ranch when I was young for a real Texas. It's like, you know, yeah. It's not enough to be living in Texas and everything. We had to go have the Texas experience.
Yeah. In Texas. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
there's two of them here, actually. There's another one. I think it's more privately owned. I delivered it there with UPS a while ago. But this other one's, it's a chain. You know, it's a Westgate, or I think it's Westgate, big company. And Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, it's you can do glamping, you do archery shooting, mud boat, what's it called? Airboat rides and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know what that's got to do with Western stuff, but you can do it anyway. And you do the big mud buggy things, and you know, if you want to get dirty on a big toy, that's what you do. And yeah, they've got a marina and you know, all this stuff. It's all very.
It sounds like Dude Ranch meets Florida. When I was growing up, it was just basically, you know, horseback riding and.
Yeah, well, they're putting in a water park for this year. So.
Oh my goodness.
It's going theme park. I guess it is a theme park, really. You get a nice crowd there. But, you know, everybody's kind of generally in a good mood. They're all on they're all on vacation, so that's the good thing about it. It's not the same people every time I go. So yeah, it's good. And yeah, it's the best one to do actually, and it's only half an hour from here.
Oh, that's good.
I think they're doing two a month at the moment, but I think they're going to do every weekend, so that's even better. I'm booked up every weekend in January so far, in February, March.
Wow.
And always looking for the odds, you know, get the odd speciality ones thrown in there somewhere on a Friday or something. So I just keep looking about. It's easier if I can get them back to back, because I load the car up on the Saturday and then I can leave the stuff in there for the Sunday. I don't have to unload it again. So that's going well.
It's good. How big of a setup is it that you have to take with you?
10x10 canopy.
Okay. And table.
I've got 3 6-foot tables.
Two
pegboards are hang up on the walls. So they're 4 feet by 2 feet. And I've got some blocks of wood to hang Julie over and bits and pieces. It takes about it's quicker putting it up than it. It's longer putting it up than it is taking it down. It takes about maybe an hour and a quarter to put it up, and maybe an hour to strip it down.
Wow, that's a lot of work though, Neil.
Yeah, it is on one leg.
I hope you heal up quickly.
Yeah, well, the next two is actually, I've got to take a cart, because I know that I can't get close to where I'm supposed to pitch the tent up, so I've got to take a cart and haul the stuff over the grass and stuff like that, but there you go. All in a day's work. As long as it sells, I don't care.
Well, I just wanted to first of all, you tell me what you're interested in covering. I was just having a quick scroll through some of the things that you'd sent me.
We've got the catastrophic contagion thing.
Well, that is interesting. Yeah, I did not have a chance to look at that yet.
That's dated for this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think October. Yeah, so get ready for that, folks. And if you look at their website, of course, it's John Hopkins and Bill and Melinda Gates. Event 201 on steroids.
Well, it really looks, they haven't changed the logo up very much. It very much looks like Event 201. You've got the same kind of world with the dots on it and so forth. Yeah. So this is a tabletop exercise called Catastrophic Contagion.
They've had it already, haven't they?
It was
set in 2025. Yeah. Of course, it was a fictional date.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can have a fictional date.
Okay. Yeah, I actually do remember when this happened, now that I'm looking at the page here.
Yeah, I don't know how you can have a fictional date. A date's a date, right?
Yeah.
But it's always got that at the bottom of the page when you watch the little video thing. And I have to say, they're really bad actors. I don't know. They could have afforded somebody better than that, I think. Mr. Gates must get somebody new for the casting couch, I think, and get some decent actors in there. Because there's some of them in that little short video you see with masks on. I think there's two people wearing masks. One minute they've got them on, the next minute they don't. The next minute they've got them on, the next minute they don't. It's just farcical. You know? The conclusions, the lessons, they say, from the exercise. The big one, of course, is countries should prioritise efforts to increase trust in government. I don't know how they can increase something that doesn't exist at all. And public health. So we have to trust public health after people have dropped dead all around us. Improve public health communication efforts. That means propaganda. and increase the resiliency of populations to misleading information and reduce the spread of harmful misinformation. So just censor people. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing good in that, in any of that. In future pandemics, like they know they're coming, we should continue to expect even more major disruptions from misinformation and disinformation. The WHO can be a globally trusted source. I doubt it. And it can share science and public health information widely, but we should not expect it alone to combat or put a stop to the spread of this mis- and disinformation. Countries need to collaborate to anticipate the threat and prepare to combat it with their own laws and procedures. In other words, censorship, right? Just as many types of economic and societal harms can be anticipated and accounted for in pandemic preparedness plans, so too can predictable, false or misleading health messaging. Concertedly exploring ways to address this phenomenon on a national level in advance of the next pandemic will be crucial to saving lives. Whose lives? Theirs, maybe? And then you've got that Hotez creep. I sent you a couple of little clips of him.
Yes.
He's calling on the WHO to get other United Nations departments involved, including NATO. So they want troops on the street, basically.
Mm-hmm.
A martial law scenario. So I guess we get ready for blue helmets in 2026, run about the streets, possibly Chinese ones, to make sure we behave ourselves and put our masks on and don't come out of our buildings. Like they did in China, because they were the example to, you know, they were put up as the example of how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
By locking people into their homes. Basically, they welded doors shut, didn't they? In some of those tower blocks.
Yes, yes, they did.
And denied them food and drink and
if any of this was true, yes, that's exactly what they did.
Well, that's what they showed us. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they showed us that to say, look, this is how you do it, right? They should strengthen international systems for sharing and allocating scarce public health resources. Equity, right? Equity. We have to protect the poor and vulnerable people, never mind the rest of you middle-class consumers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's all getting set up.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the other day I was having a conversation with someone that I would just say they're completely normal in normal land, the normie, and they were just mocking the idea that there could be, that there was a new world order, that there could be a new world order, that there was world governance. And, you know, I mean, I know that the whole NWO is a kind of a catchy thing that, you know, everybody rappers and everybody's jumped onto. But I was just pointing out to them, I said, well, what we've seen in the last 5 years is a UN body that is the World Health Organization dictate to the rest of the world how each country was going to respond to this scenario. And then we have this body that's thoroughly corrupt that is, in many cases, country by country, supersedes national law in terms of a pandemic. And of course, people rationalize that. They say, well, this is something that's killing a lot of people. And so there you go. You're back to what actually happened.
Yeah. So but at the same time, we have a guy in charge of it, apparently, Mr. Tedros, who is not a doctor. They keep calling him a doctor. He's not a doctor. And he's not a medical doctor. And who is wanted for genocide in his own country. How did that guy get the job? I mean,
well, he's got the perfect qualifications, don't you think?
Well, exactly, yeah. But if you say that to a normie, you know, it's clearly provable. You can look it up even on the US terrorism watch list website. You can see that the organization he was involved in was labeled a terrorist organization. And he can't go back to his own country of Ethiopia. or he's going to be arrested. Now, if you say that to somebody and then you ask them the question, how did that guy get the job? Because everybody that supposedly voted for him knows his track record.
Right.
So how did he get the job? And as you say, because he's got the perfect qualifications.
The trouble is I don't even like to make the distinction anymore, like normal person, normie, awake, because I have watched the last 5 years where people have splintered into increasingly tiny groups that explain it to themselves down to the point where, you know, like there's no truth. This is what I choose to believe. And
yeah, but it's like flat earth, Dave, isn't it? It's like that flat earth argument.
Well,
what's it matter? What's it matter? You get killed in a flat earth or a globe, it doesn't make any difference. Yeah.
Well, I look at what the people, well-meaning people who have tried to make heads or tails of what actually happened. What did we live through? Was it, you know, made in a lab? Did it come from a monkey? Was it anything at all? Was it all theater, et cetera? And it's what's hard to say to people, especially if you're into the no virus germ theory camp, is toxins are real. Bioweapons are real.
Mm-hmm.
When they choose to, you know, if you think we just lived through a total scam, and I'm, you know, that doesn't mean that they can't release something very, very real. You can't lose sight of the fact that depopulation is high on the list of things that have to be done, and rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how do they achieve that with a genuine bioweapon? So.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not jumping on the, oh, this is all the next scam, which is, we saw that. See, we've seen for ourselves where people's head go, where their heads go because of like monkeypox. Oh, the latest scam. Anything that they talk about is the latest scam. The H1, H5N1 or H1N5 or,
yeah. Let's call it bug flu.
Yeah.
Exactly. Avian flu. Well, they can't make their mind up if it's avian or it's bird. Get that mixed up as well. But, you know, I've said this to people. So why do you think they're only going after chickens? You know, and mm-hmm. turkeys and geese and stuff like that. There's more wild birds out there than there ever will be. Stuff that we eat. They're not bothering about them. You know, they're the ones that are partly spreading it. So mm-hmm. why are they killing all the chickens? You know, the chickens are most chickens are kept indoors. Away from wild birds.
Yes.
So the whole thing's on us. And now they're saying that, I don't know if Paula sent me it. I don't think she did ask that time. But apparently, an earthworm had bird flu.
Really?
Now, how does that happen? Because it's underground, right? I mean, how does an earthworm get bird flu?
Well, the chicken picked it up.
How do you get a PCR test up its nose? I mean, if the chicken picked it up and ate it, then it's clearly dead, and I don't think it was the flu that did it. I'll call it beaked. It was chickened, right? Yeah, so an earthworm got bird flu, apparently.
Oh, it died with avian flu. Or did it die from avian flu?
Perhaps the chicken sneezed on it before it ate it. I don't know. Well, mind you, the chicken should have had a mask on. Clearly its mask didn't work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and cows and pigs can get it as well. So it's only the stuff we eat that can get this thing.
Yeah.
Unless you believe the bat theory. It came from some bat soup in China.
Yeah. No, I do.
It's really amazing that humanity survived this long, isn't it? I don't know how we got here.
I
don't know how we got here without these nice pharmaceutical companies helping us along the way.
Absolutely. So, what else have you been paying attention to?
The one in the I've not really paying attention an awful lot because I've been kind of busy. But this came out on the 5th of December 2024 in the Daily Mail, of course. The Giro Engineering Project Next Door. Interactive map reveals the locations of thousands of controversial experiments to alter the climate. So is there one in your hometown? And I've got a map of Britain here showing you all these places in France as well. All over the world, really. Where all these geoengineering things are taking place, including carbon capture. You know those big machines that don't produce anything?
Yes.
I'd actually show you one here, actually, on this thing. It's like, they look like the engines on a jet, and they apparently suck in the air, right? Air mm-hmm. with CO2. It's got a label on it. It shows you little arrows. It's sucking it in. And it's coming out the other side saying clean air. Well, clean air's got CO2 in it. Right?
Yeah.
If pure air, as we breathe it, I mean, it's mainly nitrogen. I mean, I don't know what they're talking about oxygen for. It's oxygen, nitrogen, it's got CO2, it's got all other elements in it. Clean air is just non-polluted air. So they're clearly classing CO2 as a pollutant. Yeah?
Yeah.
Plant food is now a pollutant. It's official. And what they do with this stuff is they apparently put it into some kind of liquid or something. And, I don't know, bury it or something. Oh, here it is. This one that sucks out there is the DAC technologies use chemical reactions. I wonder what the chemicals they're using are. I wonder how harmful they are to the environment. To extract CO2 out of the air, typically with a stack of metal air scrubbers that look like fans. And I wonder what kind of energy was used to make them. Do you think? Mm-hmm. CO2 is then stored underground, reducing the amount of the greenhouse gas that reaches the atmosphere or alternatively recycled for conversion into synthetic fuels. So now CO2 has been used as a synthetic fuel. For what? I've never heard of CO2 fuel, have you?
No.
Oh, sorry, it's plant food. It's fuel for plants, that's what it is. There's a Swiss company called Climeworks. I think they might have missed out the T there. That's probably Climeworks. I don't know. Opened the world's first facility near Zurich, while the UK's first one was switched on in Sheffield in 2023. And it takes a massive 1.5 million tonnes of CO2 each year. That's how much it captures. Wow. As Alan used to say, show me a set of scales and put that on it and let's see what it weighs.
Mm.
Because, as I've said before, they say it's going up into the atmosphere, so it must be lighter than clean air, right?
Mm-hmm.
It must be lighter, so how could they weigh it? If somebody what? Up there holding it in the scales and then taking their weight off of them.
It's, yeah. You know, what you just said, then the whole farce of it, reminded me of a headline that you sent that I haven't looked at, but I'm intrigued. It is, we've created a whole pretend world. What was that about?
Oh, I sent that a few days ago, didn't I?
Yeah.
Let me see.
It was a Zero Hedge article, but I didn't punch it out.
I think it's just a kind of more serious look at clown world.
Mm.
the insanity that people are prepared to believe in and go along with. I'm just scrolling back up here. It's talking about the pager attacks in Gaza and West Bank and that area. This is basically, it's a quote from a Mossad agent saying, we create a pretend world. We are a global production company. We write the screenplay. We're the directors. We're the producers. We're the main actors. And the world is our stage. Now, where have we heard that phrase before? The world is our stage. So basically they're saying that I don't go along with this. Michael said that the walkie-talkie batteries, which included explosive devices, were made in Israel at a Mossad facility.
Mm-hmm.
The first story we heard is that they were made abroad somewhere and then altered. That was the first story that came out. And again, how and apparently they were made in 2022, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did they actually know where these would be in 2024? They had no idea.
Maybe it was part of the catastrophic contagion tabletop exercise.
Maybe. Yeah. 4,000 people injured, 42 people killed. That's the official figures, apparently. But they had 16,000 of these things, these pagers. Now, if there's 16,000 of them, I'm surprised only 4,000 people are injured. So
right.
have they still got some? Are they going to do it again? Or are they in some other country where this could be done? I don't know who this is quoted. I think it might be somebody from Hezbollah, I'm not sure. This is a very stupid device by nature. This is the reason they're using it. There's almost no way how to tap it. Well, the English isn't very good. But the Mossad guy goes, oh, this is the Mossad guy. It became the best product in the Beeport area in the world. When they are buying from us, they have zero clue that they are buying from the Mossad. We make like the Truman Show. Everything is controlled by us behind the scenes. There's a video of this guy talking on 60 Minutes about this. So, it's an authorized source. It must be true.
Mm-hmm.
It's a make-believe world. And it's isn't that what everybody's doing? All these so-called authorities, a pretend world.
So what they're saying is that it looks like, I mean, I haven't watched the video yet, but they didn't just make the pagers, but they had to create salespeople. There's a shell company. Yep. There's a saleswoman.
This is terrorism.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, we've got to know how much you're putting in your bank account or how much you're taking out, where it came from, what you're going to use it for. Well, this is terrorism. This is somebody's funded this. The Israeli government's funded this, paid for it, and implemented it and killed a lot of people and injured a lot of people. This is outright terrorism. But you can't say that or you're anti-Semitic, right?
Mm.
And nobody's saying a word about it. None of the governments are saying, oh, wait a minute, something wrong with this. It goes on.
No, it's, I mean, what's interesting too is the whole idea of U.S. support for Israel and trying to make it a partisan thing. When it's across the board, and it always has been, the partisan issue is simply played up at election time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that you sent me that reminded me of just how nonpartisan support for Israel is, was that Jonathan Pollard story, this spy who served his time, but interestingly, Trump gave his Israeli handler a full pardon when Trump was first in office. And you sent me the headline from one of the Irish newspapers, I think it was, that...
The Israeli agents in that the Irish deserve all the immigrants from Palestine.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
and well, he's been in Israel since his parole ended. I think he went over there in 2021 or 22. And there's been some talk. He was embraced by Netanyahu on the tarmac. He's been set up like a state hero in Israel. This is a spy, a convicted spy who served, I don't know, 20, 25 years in U.S. prison. And is now living in Israel as a kind of royalty. And there's talk of him running for office in Israel. And he said that one of the first things that he will do, his platform includes sending displaced people from Gaza to Ireland because Ireland is so supportive of Palestine.
I don't see that that's his choice. Surely Ireland can say, no, we don't want them.
No, I mean, it. You know, what it is it's posing and posturing. Of course, Ireland is not going to end up with these refugees.
Oh,
but,
you
know, he's, well, yeah, you're right.
It won't just be Palestinians. It'll be anybody that wants to claim they're Palestinian.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the problem. I mean, nobody's going to object to genuine Palestinian refugees, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of people there just throwing away their passports.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, I mean, what an opportunity for anybody to come, isn't it? I mean, you know, Gaza's been flattened. Well, I'm from Gaza. Where's your documentation? Oh, it's buried under the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's ripe for abuse, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from any Arab-speaking person, really. From anywhere in the region.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what he's at. Because, I mean, I don't think the Palestinians that are there really want to leave, or did they left a long time ago? I think they're, you know, they're obviously a proud people, and they put up with a lot, and they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's... I guess it's maybe it's a bit mad to stay behind in an area like that with, you know, what's been done to you and what's intended to be done to you. But, you know, if that's where your family's lived for generations and generations, thousands of years, really, then, you know, you've got an attachment to it, don't you?
Well, you do have an attachment to, and I think it's for us, I mean, you've been to a lot of different places in the world, and I have. For people who move around or have been mobile, you've got to put yourself in the mindset of just what you said, people who've lived in a place for thousands of years, and maybe they haven't traveled all over the world. It can be very hard to even conceive of how you would do this, how you would leave, how you would exit, you know, the mobility of that. But,
well, especially in today's world, where they're possibly seeing, you know, all this LGBTQ stuff and all this stuff that's absolutely anathema to their belief system. Why would they want to go to somewhere like that?
Yeah.
You know, unless they're really, they're forced to, or, you know, they're just, chancellors jumping on a bandwagon.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of gone out the news, isn't it? There's all this other stuff, drones, you've got these drones going on, oh my God, we're getting invaded by aliens. And the government doesn't know anything about it. as far as I know, these drones run on GPS. I mean, I'm sure the American military has got something that could tap into one of these drones and say, aha, I know where it's landed.
It's a complete mystery. They're alien drones.
Well, don't be surprised if we see a terror attack using drones and they don't know where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They can't track these things. They can see them up in the air, but they can't see where they go.
No, well, you know, that what they're going to say is that they've been hacked, they've been taken over. Oh, well, we see who manufactured it. It was legitimate, but, you know.
It's the same technology they used for the pagers. Oh, no, it wasn't them. It wasn't them.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't create that, pretend world. We can create our own. And then we've got fog. Have you heard of the fog? It's like something like a James Herbert movie.
No.
There's this fog that's making people ill now. I think there was a case in Toronto, and there was some other parts of the world have had this fog. It's real thick, dense fog that doesn't go away in daytime. It's making people sick. Apparently.
This was a Stephen King movie.
Yeah,
it was.
I thought it was James Herbert. Or was it?
Was that James Herbert? I don't know. Let's find
up
out.
As you are. The fog. Directed by John Carpenter.
John Carpenter. Okay.
He was the director. He was the director.
Yeah.
I thought it was based on the book. Is this? I thought it was based on. I can't see. I know it was a book because I read it.
Well, it was, they're saying that this one that I'm remembering, I think they did a little mini, oh, The Mist. That's what I'm remembering. Okay. So The Fog was written and directed by John Carpenter.
Okay.
But The Mist was Stephen King.
Oh, Stephen.
And
Yeah.
And this was a 1980 novella, and I saw a mini series. This was good. I watched this one with Alan, and it was a mist that was making people sick.
Yeah. And you could go out into it, or you'd come back as a kind of zombie type person.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, this is going on apparently. And then I saw a time lapse video of, I think it was Barcelona, just on New Year's Day, and it literally, because it was time lapse, it looked like this, the whole sky was falling. It had something like 15 inches of rain in Barcelona overnight, or within a day or two. And the time lapse just showed it was almost like the cloud, the whole clouds were just falling to earth. Which takes you back to geoengineering, right? Is it happening in your backyard? Yeah, well, possibly. But go back to this geoengineering one. There's kind of warning of the dangers and all this kind of thing. But they keep comparing what's this one? Project Speedbird, right? What does this one do? It will burn biomass, organic matter, including wood and crop residue. What's wood residue? Isn't that something you can burn in your house? To make sustainable aviation fuel, right? Such as ethanol. Right, and then they say it's the equivalent of saving 26,000 British Airways domestic flights. Right, that's the amount of fuel they can use, and da da da. So all the time they're telling you this is dangerous, and they're telling you what the savings will be in terms of, you know, how many flights will be the equivalent CO2 limits or whatever. 230,000 tons per year, this one says, and that's the equivalent of 26,000 flights. So if they turn around in a while and say, yeah, we've decided this isn't a good idea, oh well, the alternative is we have to cancel 26,000 flights. They're giving you the alternative to the danger in the same article. The equivalent of taking, you know, 10,000 cars off the road, or you know, 100,000 cars off the road, or whatever it is. So that's going to be the solution if they decide, right, we're just going to say this is dangerous. But they'll keep on doing it, of course. But we have to take these off the road. We have to cancel all these flights. We have to do this. That's the only way, because this is too dangerous to continue with. It's affecting the weather or something.
Yes, well, I mean, I think that these kinds of things, it all, in a way, falls under the Agenda 21/2030 of no private vehicles. But that's also going to include, you know, very limited mobility. So it's not just your cars, but of course, it's any way that you can get around and travel. You also reminded me of something different, but really, you know, Trump has promised that he's going to begin this massive deportation of illegal aliens program. And I heard a statistic, I don't remember how many thousands of it, but it said, the question is, how will they actually be deporting people? What will be the mechanism of how they'll do this?
I have always wondered how they were going to do that.
Yeah. And,
Other than drugging them and putting them on aircraft and then dragging them off the plane at the other end, can you imagine being the air hostess on that flight when everybody's been deported? They're going to be in a really good mood, aren't they?
Well, exactly.
To attack the pilots and stuff and take the plane down, then, well, there you go.
I don't remember how many thousands of commercial planes that they said would be needed to do it. But they said if we address just the number of illegal aliens that have come into the U.S. over the last 4 years, you would have to have commercial planes running. And they told you how many a day, blah, 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 for 6.5 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's good campaign rhetoric, but like you said, how does it actually get done? And I think the answer is it doesn't.
No, unless they put them on cattle trucks. Maybe they'll do that. But, you know, you've seen the length of some of these trains, right? They can carry a lot more than an airline.
Yeah.
You know, 100 containers on a train driving out of Mexico.
Well, I personally, I think it's just a campaign promise. And
of course it is. Of course it is. The barn door's open, the horse has bolted a long time ago. They can never go back. It's the same with Ireland and UK. They can never, the demographics of these countries are changed forever now.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's done. Job done.
Yeah.
And poor white man is in trouble. That's it.
Mm.
And their cultures are basically, give it another 10, 20 years, the culture will be completely destroyed.
Mm.
You know, once like take Ireland, Scotland, for example, the musical side of it, you know, the folk music, all that's going to disappear.
Yes, I have to say something positive, and I actually think I'm going to share a little bit of this music, but I correspond with a listener in Ireland, and she's lovely, and she was listening to Alan, and she listens to me, and she's got a beautiful daughter who does traditional Irish music. And it's just so uplifting, and she's with a group of youngsters who do this, you know, her own age and her people. So there is pushback in that way of people saying, "I'm Irish, I love this music," and so.
Well, in Ireland,
that makes me hopeful.
Yeah, they still have the Gaeltacht, which is the Gaelic speaking areas in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
and basically, you can't, you know, if you can't speak Irish, you can't buy a house there. In these areas, you've got to be able to speak the native language to get into these areas.
Mm.
And long may that continue, but you know they're going to come under attack at some point.
They're
going to come out with all, "Well, that's racist," you know, mm-hmm. something to that effect. And then we'll see how far the pushback goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's if they take over those areas, that's it. It's done.
Mm.
It's what the British did to the Irish and the Scots centuries ago. You're not allowed to speak your language.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's illegal. Be hung. That's it. You can't wear your tartan. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't sing your songs. Because they'll offend somebody, right?
Mm.
And yet God Save the Queen has a verse in it about killing the Scots.
Really?
Yeah, but they don't sing that one.
Mm, of course not.
Florida Scotland will probably made illegal, you know. Who knows?
star, gone salt, gone shod, gone sport, gone spionna, oh, shod of me,
Flourisha o Kundelisha at Kartusle Corsi, Sgiolaris Nashunta Anacht.
Now, well, I mean, we won't have national anthems, will we? The UN anthem will have, you know, God Praise Tedros or something. Hail to Eugenics. Something like that. Yeah, with a nice rainbow flag to look up to and salute. Yeah. So anyway, the Irish deserve it, according to that Israeli spy, so I guess they're going to get it. But I'm about two-thirds of the way through a documentary that came out recently called Beneath Sheep's Clothing. It's pretty good. It's studying communism and how it's affected America and where it came from and all that kind of thing. So I'd recommend people have a look at that. It's done in very short little segments. I mean, it's about an hour and 40 minutes long, but all short segments, very simply explained, no big technical jargon and all that in it. It's pretty good, and it's going through a lot of different aspects of what's going on in America today and how it relates back to exactly what was done 100 years previous.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's quite good.
Beneath Sheep's Clothing, okay.
Yeah, the old Fabian thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where does that take us then?
Well,
Tony Blair. How about Tony Blair?
You know, that's so funny because I was just looking at this.
He's always good for the laugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, of course, one of his cohorts, Mandelson, Peter Mandelson, the Dark mm-hmm. Lord, as he was called back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
The Dark Lord. He was portrayed as some kind of Satanist. And very evil. And he's now going to be the ambassador of the United States.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that in this article that you sent me on?
Came out a week or so ago.
Okay.
But this is Tony Blair.
Before we leave Mandelson, you've just reminded me. I couldn't think of his name. I was trying to... Do you remember when Alan talked about Mandelson hanging out in some Rothschild's pool in France. Mm-hmm. What, do you remember
there was
that?
A body. Yeah, there was somebody was dead in the pool, I believe, was it?
I'm not sure about the body, but I don't remember the body thing, but he was just hanging out over there and dictating different policy in the UK. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that happened under his watch, Mandelson, there was some dome that was actually in an artistic, you know how they do these really creepy things and call it art? And this was approved by Mandelson. But I was trying to remember the details on that and look it up, and I could not find it. But we'll have to go on the hunt for that story. So, yeah, he's a creep. So he's now the ambassador to the U.S. That's great.
That's a great honor. Here, I've got this is a Guardian article about unlikely friendship that transcends wealth and politics. Now, this was, it doesn't have a date on it, but it says it's over 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the scion of Britain's grandest banking family, Nat Rothschild probably never thought he would consort with a lifelong Labour supporter whose favourite poem by Christopher Lowe contains the line, "I shall vote Labour because if I do not vote Labour, my balls will drop off." But in the last decade, an enduring bond has been forged across the political divide, as if there is such a thing, as Rothschild has become one of the closest friends of Peter Mandelson. They go on holiday together and socialise in London, where Mandelson is now a fixture on the elite social scene as he entertains the great and the good in his white stucco Regency house near Regent's Park, bought with a legacy from his late mother Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Really? I wonder where his late mother Mary got it. Friends of the two men who say the link between a Rothschild and the grandson through his mother of the late Deputy Labour Prime Minister Herbert Morrison seemed an unlikely match, insist that they are genuinely close. Maybe they're gay, who knows. Both are attracted by each other's slightly different star qualities. They're stars.
Yeah.
Rothschild, 37, has been able to socialise with a senior politician who negotiated trade policy on behalf of the EU's 500 million citizens. How nice of him. He never asked any of them, though. For his part, Mandelson, 55, has been introduced by Rothschild into circles whose members are fabulously wealthy and have social connections to go with it. One Mandelson friend said, "Peter does have a weakness for extremely rich friends." I'm sure he does. I'm sure he does.
Some people have a sweet tooth, and he just has a weakness for really rich people.
Yeah, he just has to go shopping for them, right? Or maybe they go shopping for him and say, "Right, Peter, this is what you have to do." Another factor, which has nothing to do with status, of course not, has strengthened their friendship. Rothschild offered strong support for Mandelson after the most traumatic episode of his political career, when he was forced to resign from the cabinet for a second time. Right? He resigned twice. And Tony Blair forced him, apparently, probably to protect himself, in January 2001. The millionaire hedge fund manager was also on hand at a difficult moment in Mandelson's personal life when his mother, to whom the Trade Secretary was particularly close, died in 2006. So he's a mummy's boy. That tells you something. Peter's friendship with Nat Rothschild dates back over the past decade, one friend said. It is important to understand that Nat and other members of the Rothschild family really stood by Peter during his down and out period. Mm-hmm. So he's a down and out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why he needs to, he has a weakness for rich friends. Maybe he just kept getting broke. senior Conservatives say the decision by Rothschild to turn against his old friend, Oxford friend George Osborne. Now, George Osborne was the Chancellor, I believe, at the time, and he was pictured with prostitutes and snort and coke and all sorts of things, but I don't think he resigned. It shows that Mandelson must have something on Rothschild. I think it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Friends of Mandelson say such remarks show Osborne's immaturity. So they're having a spat, right, allegedly. Osborne doesn't seem to understand about true friendship, and he doesn't seem to understand basic manners after he briefed against Peter. So there you go. He's got a weakness for rich friends, and he just happens to know the richest man in the world, apparently. Although, apparently, that's Elon Musk these days, they'll tell you.
Yes, absolutely.
No, I think Elon Musk's probably the wealthiest social a security recipient on the planet. Apart from the royal families, of course. But yeah, social welfare, that's what's keeping, or corporate welfare, as it's called, is what's keeping Musk going. And Musk is now, apparently, in the first 6 months that he took over Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, has deleted 50 million accounts because he's a free speech advocate.
Really?
Yeah. Or five million. 5 million, maybe. I'm not sure. Maybe it's 50, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of accounts on there. Anybody that doesn't agree with him, basically, is getting purged. What does that remind you of? Yeah, a purge.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, the idea that he was a free speech advocate was always pretty ludicrous.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
But, of course, Mr. Jones, who apparently is bankrupt, but he's still carrying on, is pushing Trump, he's pushing Musk. They're all good guys now, apparently. So somebody's got to him, obviously. Maybe he's getting to keep InfoWars going, and as long as he puts the right message out.
I don't want to go down that avenue, but there's some interesting things that have come out. Have you seen any of the stuff that has come out of people examining the Sandy Hook trial and ruling?
No.
I may link to something. There's just some interesting commentary, blow-by-blow commentary from an attorney. I think more than one person has done this, but who has shown that no attorney would have allowed a defense to go forward in that manner. Yeah.
So it was just a stage show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, get back to Tony Blair.
Okay.
Another dark lord. Taxes are high. The NHS is coming apart at the seams. We need a once-in-a-generation disruption. Here's what could change everything. So this is what he's saying. It needs once-in-a-generation disruption. I think they've just done that, haven't they, over the past 5 years. This is him talking, apparently, if we're to believe that these people actually do this. I make you this confident prediction. In the not-too-distant future, British people will all have their own unique digital identifier and will make most transactions through their phone as citizens with government and as customers with firms. And we will wonder what all the fuss was about. It will make everything we do faster, cheaper, and more reliable. It's all for your convenience. But first, the bigger political context in which these debates about the future are happening. We live in an era of disruption, including in politics. Well, who's causing that disruption?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the people. It's not the people demanding digital ID. Britain, like every major developed nation, faces the same dilemma. Our taxes are high, our spending and levels of public debt are high. Well, how about cutting the public spending and on wars and things like that, and then the taxes will go down, right? Isn't that common sense? And our service outcomes are poor. So they've got poor service outcomes. What does that mean? They're employing too many people who aren't really qualified for the job or don't speak English and all that kind of thing? Maybe that's got something to do with it. So we spend more on the NHS than ever before. I don't see how those three things go together, but there you go. With more staff than ever before. Didn't they just fire a load of them for not taking shots? And the service is coming apart at the seams because they destroyed it over the past 5 years. That is why politics is being disrupted. So politics is being disrupted. I thought politics was always kind of disrupted. One side was supposed to be fighting with the other side and debating things and all that kind of thing, but clearly that isn't happening. What he means, I think, is politics is being destroyed in the eyes of the public so they can bring us something better. It's like going back to what you said about New World Order, as Alan Watt always said, you've got to destroy the old one. You've got to destroy the old order to bring in the new one. So they're destroying politics to bring in a new system, right? Any politician today who is promising management of the status quo and not fundamental change of it will lose. So that's why they promise you everything and give you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the true explanation of Donald Trump's victory in November's election. Whether he was elected or not, who knows? Eh? This is why governments across Europe are falling. So governments are falling, right? Not failing, falling. It explains everything from the splintering of the vote here in the UK at the last election to the triumph of the maverick and experimental new president of Argentina. Now, the guy that dances with the prostitutes on TV shows, that guy. It is why governing is so different today from the time more than a quarter of a century ago now when I became Prime Minister. Sorry, you were going to say something there?
I was just going to say, yeah, this Argentinian president, again, this is just theater. You know, they trotted him out at the last Davos, I think? Mm-hmm. He did, you know, and everybody said, oh, he's a maverick. You know,
yeah. And then the first thing he did was run up to Israel.
Yeah.
And then bang his head against that wall.
It's business as usual with these people, mm-hmm. always.
Yeah. So he carries on. Then between, like, we're supposed to believe he's writing all this stuff, right? But he clearly mm-hmm. isn't. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, I don't know, probably AI. Then between 1997 to 2007, we had strong growth. I don't remember that. You know, could afford investment in public services and enjoyed rising productivity and real wages. What is that, opposed to fake wages? I mean, what's a real wage? any wage is real. It depends how much you're getting, right? Whether it's viable or not. With satisfaction rates for the NHS rising from 34% in 1997 to 70%. Compared to 24% today. Well, maybe some people are waking up to the fact that it's actually a euthanasia service.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Maybe I'm not too satisfied. You want to kill me? And it was $2 to the pound. Right, there mm-hmm. you go. The financial crisis, the energy crisis, changes in the global economy, COVID, and in Britain post-Brexit, frequent changes in leadership have all taken their toll. Well, who caused that? Who caused all of that? It wasn't the people. And today the challenges of governance, are infinitely harder. Why? Why? Why is it harder? Because they're making people very dissatisfied. However, there is one tool available today which wasn't available back in 2007. We're living through a 21st century technological revolution. That sounds a bit like Schwab. Every bit as dramatic in its effects, if not more so, as the 18th century industrial revolution. It's exactly like Schwab, right?
Mm-hmm.
Already it's transforming the private sector. The biggest companies in the world today are tech giants. In each case, they are valued at more than the entire economic output of most countries. And just a point on that, I was listening to, I think it was Ryan Christian's Last American Vagabond, mm-hmm. and we're talking about North Carolina. And the whole lithium thing could well be a smokescreen. Because there's other stuff in the ground there, some kind of special sand that's used in computer chips.
It's worth
hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars.
Way
more than the lithium is.
Yeah. Maybe that's just a bonus.
Mm-hmm. But all the big tech companies were already there. Google, Apple. Mm-hmm. Microsoft, they're all there, big factories, and they were up and running a week mm-hmm. after the event, and people were still living in shacks underwater. But the factories were up and running, and people couldn't get to work.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? They must have shipped people in, right? if you've not got a house, the last thing you're going to do is go to work. Just on that one, think about how we live and interact with each other. How we use Amazon to shop, mobile phones for banking, Google Maps for directions, apps to watch TV, consume news and book trains, flights, holidays and entertainment. And they all use our data to personalise their service. Well, who gave us all that? I didn't see anybody demanding it. You know, they still sell maps in the gas stations. You know, I've never seen anybody buy one. You know, if the internet went down, people wouldn't know how to get from one end of town to the other.
That's true.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when I was driving across Europe from Bulgaria, I always had a map in the car, and I would look online and I would write down the road numbers. Like people always say, oh, you've got to turn towards this, that. No, you just need the road numbers. That's it.
You've got
to get to there. The next continue on that road, M whatever it is, N whatever it is. You know, follow it, but I always had a map in the car.
Yeah, no, oh. I've always been a map user too.
Yeah, and I can't imagine like somebody in their 20s, a young person in a car, even looking at a map and understanding it at all.
Yeah.
What they're even looking at, you know? Because it's not all nice straight lines and everything. It's all squiggly and there's hills and everything depicted in it. They wouldn't even know what that is, you know?
When does this thing start talking?
What?
The map. When does it talk?
Yeah. Anyway, why is TikTok so successful? Because it's pushed, that's why.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stupid people use it. Because its algorithms establish your personal preferences so quickly and satisfy them with their content. In other words, they're just feeding into your needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not finding things that you're interested in on your own. It's giving you them.
Right.
To stop you looking into things. I'll just look at this TikTok. Oh, and people go, I'm sure people spend hours just watching this garbage.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Two minutes. The whole day's gone. It's to satisfy them. So that's the satisfaction. They need to get a life, I think. How do they do that? By accumulating your data and using the services of a huge number of computer engineers to make those algorithms so effective. Well, so effective for what? Gathering your data. Is this world also scary in many respects? He's asking that as a question. Absolutely. Most technology, including artificial intelligence, is general purpose technology. It can be used for good or ill. When's it ever used for anything good? We always see the bad side of it. We never really see, I'm sure, I mean, you know, if you go on Google Maps, if you try to drive somewhere, yeah, it's got a use, right? I use it when I'm delivering packages. It helps me find the address, right? So it can be used for things that are good. But on the other side, of course, it's used to track exactly where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it knows where you are at every given moment. You know, our phones at UPS and Amazon's the same. They track you wherever you are. They can tell exactly what street you're on, what house you're outside. They can tell exactly where you dropped the package.
It's true, too, and if you think about it, like it helping you find an address or find a place, I mean, if you knew how to read a map, if you had the map in there and it was kept up to date, would it help you find that any faster than looking at the map?
Yes.
It does? Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, a map doesn't give you individual house numbers.
I see.
So, I mean, these things take you right to the door, more or less.
Yeah.
Or they take you to the mailbox. Right. If you're out in the country and the house could be 200 yards away down the street, you don't know. Right. That's how I fell over and hurt myself because the house wasn't where they said it was. So it has its uses, right? I mean, everything has its uses. If you want to use it for a specific purpose to help you out, then maybe you've no other option, you know. But as I say, the opposite of that is it's tracking you everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
As is your general phone, you know, I mean, and your computer's listening to you. So when did they ever state when they sold your computer that, by the way, this is recording everything you say? Would people have bought it, do you think? It's hard to know. I mean, young people probably wouldn't care. But if somebody, say, somebody in their 50s or 60s thought, oh, well, I better get with the technology, you know, and went to the store, and the guy says, oh, here's a computer, you can do this, you can do that. But by the way, it's listening to everything you say, it's recording your every keystroke, it's every website you look at, it's going to record that, and it's going to be stored somewhere, just in case the government wants to come back and prosecute you at a future date. The 50-year-old or 60-year-old person would walk out the door without the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Young person, oh, I don't care about that. I'm not doing anything wrong. Yet, you know, you don't think you're doing anything wrong, but retrospectively, you might well be. So, yeah, I mean, there's everything we're given is for our benefit and convenience, as yourself and Alan mentioned many, many times. It's all about convenience, but we're never told the opposite. We're never told the opposite side of it. And this AI thing, it's funny, everybody, the whole world suddenly gets AI at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it just appears. You know, obviously they were talking about it for years to get people used to it, but all of a sudden, COVID strikes and AI just, whew, just like that. It's everywhere. It's it's even on your phone and everything. It's there. You didn't ask for it. It's just put on there. If you look up a like a Google search, the first thing that comes up is the AI's answer.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to go out of your way now. I mean, you have to really actively be involved in stopping it from communicating with you or attempting to communicate with you. But Blair goes on to say here that risks should not blind us to the opportunities. And the very first opportunity that he outlines for us is this. Imagine that all your health information was in one place, easy with your permission for anyone anywhere in the health service to see. Okay, so only them though, right? Only the people in the health service have access to that, even though it's we've already had several huge examples of your health information being hacked. Then he goes on and says,
"Company's got it as well."
Yes, he says that your passport, driving license, anything you need to prove your identity were in one simple digital wallet, unique to you. That you could purchase and pay for any goods or services using your digital ID. So this is a bonus for him, and we shouldn't even think about the risks of that because this is an opportunity.
Nobody's even asking the question, why should I have to prove who I am?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you go to your local bank, right, they tend to know you, right? Mm-hmm. They're small. We're called a city, but it's a fairly small town centre. Everybody kind of, you know, if you go down there, the bank, you see the same people in the bank every day. They see you, right? Whatever. They know you, right? They know you're who you say you are. And they actually see some ID. Well, I was in here yesterday. You know, know who I am. You know my name. You just called, you said, hello, Mr. Foster. How are you doing today? You know who I am. And you ask me for ID. What's that about?
You know? This one cracks me up, though, at the bank. I don't know if all banks are this way, but where I bank, I go in and I say, I want to put this money in.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take this money out. And I just do that with my bank card. I could be standing there or driving through or whatever. Put this money in, take this money out.
Mm-hmm.
And all I need is the bank card. But the moment that I say, can I get a balance? I need to see your ID.
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait a minute. I can put money in and I can take money out and you don't need ID for that. But if I want to know how much money's in there, you've got to see my ID.
Well, I said something as well. They've actually asked me for ID to put money in my own account.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I said, why do you need my ID? If somebody's taking money out that you may believe, Isn't the person with that bank account? Because I was in here yesterday and I don't look like the same person that was in here yesterday, so it might be somebody else. You want to see ID, but I can go out to the ATM there and take $1,000 out and nobody wants to see anything.
Yeah.
And they can't answer you. They go, well, that's just the rules. I say, does that make sense to you? You know? And I say, why would I need ID to put money in my own account?
Yeah. Well, I don't at my bank. I don't need to ID to put it in there or take it out, but I've got to definitely have to prove myself if I just want to know what's my balance.
Yeah, they started that in Ireland, and you had to write your name on something to say who you were to put money in the account. And every time I went in there, I said, I just put Mickey Mouse on it. That's the only name you're getting from me. You can either take the money, put it in my account, or I'll go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they never questioned it, and I told them I was doing it. So that's how stupid it is. I half expected to go in one day and they go, "How are you doing, Mr. Mouse?" You know, that's how
dumb they'd be. Keep reading from where he says, "Now think of all of the other problems of governing, because." This is pretty choice here.
I'm scrolling down here. There was actually one bit further up. Where is it? History teaches us that what is invented by human ingenuity is rarely disinvented by human anxiety. Well, it's not disinvented by human anxiety because nobody tells you the stuff that's going to make you anxious about it.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm scrolling down here. Oh, this page is just stuck. Whatever. You're just going digital ID. So countries from Singapore to India, is that where we are?
Yes.
So the UAE and Estonia are doing this now with huge amounts of time and bureaucracy saved. Funny they don't mention Ukraine in here because Ukraine's the flagship for this apparently. Mm-hmm. Although it's apparently a war zone, but they're doing all this stuff. How's your digital ID going to work when your building's been bombed? I don't see how that works. But now think of all the other problems of governing. One of the biggest challenges in immigration is the number of people here without permission, since there are multiple ways of entering Britain lawfully, but then staying unlawfully. Well, it's the same in the States, right?
Yeah.
And go back to this immigration thing. What's it, HB1 or something it's called? The HB1 visa or something?
Mm-hmm.
HB1
visa.
HB1, yeah. None of them. I've never heard anybody mention, how about we go after the employers who are employing illegal immigrants?
No.
We've got them around here. We've got, I mean, hundreds of, I'm not going to say Mexicans, because it could be from anywhere in Latin America or South America. But picking strawberries and all, doing all that stuff. You know, what? Why are those people who employ those workers not being prosecuted? That would stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if they come here, they go, well, you're not getting a job, you're not getting any social security, you're not getting anything. There's no reason to come up there.
No. I know. You see this all the time. You know, years ago, I heard this one out of San Diego. They were kind of the poinsettia capital of the world, mm-hmm. or at least the U.S., and poinsettia is the Christmas plant.
Yeah.
So they would have these growers who would bring in illegal aliens to help with the when it was time to harvest the plants, pot them up and sell them.
That's people trafficking.
Yeah, absolutely. And then these people would either be left alone in the hills of San Diego, or they would have to go back over the border. And it's like, this is the easiest problem in the world to fix. You go after the poinsettia growers, but no, mm-hmm. no. they're wringing their hands.
Yeah, I think what we might see is a lot of people in Walmart buying suitcases again. I think I mentioned it the last time when the COVID was going on. They said, oh, it might be restricting your travel. You might not be able to go home. And suddenly there was a lot of Hispanics buying suitcases. I'm thinking, oh, they must be going home. Maybe this is just like they've seen that work. If they put the scare tactic out there that we're going to come for you, you know, maybe a lot of them will leave on their own. But maybe the more... I guess the more honest illegal immigrants might think, oh, well, that didn't work out for me, I better go back. You know, the criminals will still stay, of course, but there you go. Anyway, according to the latest estimates from the University of Oxford, there are between 600,000 to 750,000 illegal immigrants, more than in any other European country. Now, think about that, right? Germany, mm-hmm. France, Spain, these are huge countries. Britain is not a big country.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's got more than any other European country. Mm. Germany is awash with immigrants, and it has been for like 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And getting worse. I think when I was watching one of the soccer matches there last year, they mentioned, I think Turkey were playing somebody, and they said there were 60,000 Turks in Berlin alone. 60,000 in one city. Mm-hmm. Just Turkish. Mm-hmm. Never mind any other country. But I guess they were legal, so that they don't fall into this category. But suppose that before you accessed any part of the system, see, this is the way they're going. I think we discussed this before. This was the way they were going to bring in the digital ID. We have to know who everybody is because of the legal immigration, right? So everybody has to have an ID. It's like age verification to get on certain websites.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to prove you're over 16. It only applies to under 16s. Well, how can it? If you've got to prove you're over 16, then everybody has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this is the same thing, isn't it? Suppose that before you access any part of the system or welfare, you had to prove who you are and that you have the right to be in the country. and could do this swiftly and conveniently with a single app. It would allow us to track those without permission and incentivize people to not enter unlawfully or overstay because they know they would be discovered. Well, that's rubbish, right? If they're going to come unlawfully, they'll have other, how would you put it, cohorts of people around them that they don't have to access the system.
Mm-hmm.
If they're criminals, they have no interest in accessing public services. If they want anything, they're going to take it.
Right.
It would cut benefit fraud, but I don't think they're going to be claiming benefits. There's never been more fraud online since things went digital.
Mm-hmm.
More fraud, generally, since it went digital. We've discussed this before. If you had cash in your pocket, they could only take what's in your pocket, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now they can empty your bank account from Australia or wherever in the world, you know, they want to. And the only comeback you've got is you hope your bank gives you it back.
Mm-hmm.
And you can prove it's fraud. They claim that this digital ID is going to protect everybody. Well, as you say, how many systems have been hacked and all that data been stolen?
Absolutely.
What's to stop anybody stealing everybody's digital ID? Nothing. They're not talking about keeping it secure. Well, they are. It'll be safe. You know, it'll be safe. We'll keep it. We've not got a track record of losing it in the past, so, you know, you can trust us. No, of course they're going to get everybody's digital ID and the government's going to be selling it to people for a start. Insurance companies, whoever. You know, banks.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything. As Alan would always point out, we are the business. And mm-hmm. he says this in the next paragraph. He said, around the world, governments are moving in this direction. Of the 45 governments we work with, Blair's foundation, whatever. Yeah. He said, of the 45 governments we work with, I would estimate that 3/4 of them are embracing some form of digital ID. The president of the World Bank, Ajay Banga, has said it is a top priority for the bank's work with leaders. But this is only one part of the immense seismic change which this technological revolution will bring. Oh, now this is great. Here. It is transforming drug discovery.
How does that work?
Go ahead.
Do the drugs have a digital ID as well?
Yeah, he says, a whole raft of new treatments which will give us the chance to shift our healthcare system radically to prevention of disease rather than cure. If we used the potential of facial recognition, data, and DNA, we would cut crime rates by not small but game-changing margins. There are interactive education apps now available which could provide personal tutoring for pupils. But we need a digital infrastructure to access all of this, and a digital ID is an essential part of it. So what he's talking there about, I mean, he says potential facial recognition. He's really talking pre-crime.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to the old traditional bank robber, right?
Mm-hmm.
They never walked in with their faces uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
I know Alan's mentioned in the past they can get you by the way you walk and all that kind of thing, but you can fake that, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
You can just walk in a different way and do all that kind of stuff. Do you really think the criminal is going to stop at the bank teller and show his digital ID before he robs him? I mean, it's ludicrous. A criminal is not going to adhere to their system.
No.
In fact, you're going to create more criminals. You're going to create people who just want nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Who will have to live outside the system.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't doing it. So I'm going to have to find a way around it, right? And whether that's well, they'll claim it's breaking the law anyway, not having a digital ID. I mean, we've seen that in the dystopian movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's illegal not to have your ID. And they've kind of got that into people's minds anyway. Like, I'm supposed to carry my green card around with me all the time. No, I don't, because I don't want to lose it. You know? But, you've got to, as I say, you've got to carry your driving license, you've got to carry your insurance, you've got to carry these things. And this will be the thing. You've got to have a digital ID or else.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be voluntary. I was just wondering if Ajay Banga is Indian, because India is one of the world leaders in digital ID technology as it is. I think that basically the whole country is nearly there. Isn't that amazing? You can go to, I've been in India, and the squalor and deprivation there is astonishing. And that's not a priority to clean that up. The priority is to get them all digital phones, smartphones, digital ID. That's the priority.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got to know who your beggar is, right?
That's right. Banga is, he's an Indian-born American.
Yeah, he's Indian. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's why he's the president of the World Bank, because they're the prime leaders in digital ID technology.
Yeah.
Or rolling it out, anyway. But, there's no explanation about how any of this works. It's transforming drug discovery. So that they're saying that, try to equate digital ID with creating new medicines. What are they talking about? How is those two things linked? I thought research and development into medicines was how you create new medicines. I don't think digital ID has anything to do with it.
That is an interesting idea. Let's look at that paragraph again here. With a whole new raft, it's transforming drug discovery.
Well, actually, I took the first slide that said it was helping with drug busts, but it's not. They're talking about inventing new drugs to prevent disease, right?
Well, what he's really talking about there, you have to examine that sentence closely, but what he's talking about is custom made, customized medicine. But what they're really talking about here, I'm sure, is customized depopulation. Because if they've got your information and they're tailoring something just for you, I mean, come on, you really think these guys who are hell bent on our destruction are?
Well, go back to what we said about RFK Jr. You know, if mm-hmm. you want to make people health, if you want to prevent disease, stop causing it in the first place.
Yeah.
It's quite simple. You know, it's like the immigration. If you want to stop mass immigration, start going after the people that employ the illegal immigrants. You know, they're coming up with solutions for things that can easily be rectified.
Yes, and I think we have to go back to the very beginning of Blair's little article here to say how it could easily be rectified. He's giving you all of these things and about the terrible thing called politics being disrupted. Mm-hmm. The solution to all of the problems that he outlines is the total disruption of politics.
Mm-hmm.
That's my solution.
Yeah, get rid of politics.
Yeah, you remember, I think was it Norway, or I'll get it wrong, but there was a total stoppage of government for like months and months and months where they, you know, didn't have an interim.
Nobody noticed. Because when it comes to it, if the trash collection stopped tomorrow, mm-hmm. People would get rid of it themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they'd say, okay, well, the trash truck's not coming for the next 6 months. They've gone on a strike or whatever. Right, I'm not going to leave it outside my door to be infested by rats. I'm going to take it to dump myself. And they'd take it, and if the dump wouldn't take it, they'd dump it outside the door. Say, well, you keep it. I don't care.
Or burn it.
Yeah, just burn it in the backyard, and they'll go, oh, it's global warming. Yeah.
Yeah.
But people would find a way. People would find a way.
Yeah, people would find a way, and that's really what we should be. In this new year, in 2025, let's find a way. Let's go anarchy. Let's call 2025 the year of anarchy.
Yeah, I think, well, it might come to that anyway. But, catastrophic contagion comes in. Well, let's have a, what would we call it? Let's have a contagion of anarchy. Yeah. Well, the government wants to come round to help me. They can go away. I don't need their help. I honestly cannot remember ever asking the government to help me for anything. You know, at any time I've been involved with a state body, whether it's I came back to the UK and I had to go and register for unemployment benefit for a short period of time. Anytime I went there, it was like, I've got to get out of this system as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
You know, you go there as an absolute last resort and you find a way out of it as quickly as you can. As soon as you start asking them for things, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. We're here to help.
Yeah, and the I've noticed they employ a certain type of person, and it's always been that way. It's always been that way. They employ people, and they must train them in a specific way to look down on you. You know, because that's the impression I've always got from anybody. Mm-hmm. In that kind of position, whether it's any kind of government agency, they all look down on you because you're there as the little guy, you know, begging for help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right. The way they treat you.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I am going to have to run.
Okay.
For today, but where are we? Are we back in the swing now of,
All right.
All right, good. Well, I hope when I talk to you next month that your ankle is fully healed.
I don't think it'll be fully healed, but I should be able to walk.
Anyway. Take care, everybody. Happy New Year. I guess I get to say that for a few more days. And I'll talk to you soon, Neil.
Okay. No bother. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Okay.
Okay, take care.
All right.
Something that the world didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away. And I've got something that the world didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away. Well, it is love, sweet love, oh, sent to me from my